You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, now, you know, a while ago I was telling you about some of the other things on the council this week, particularly about sustainable seafood and the other stuff. But one of the things that we had set aside, if you were with us last week, I was talking to Josh DeMello about this advisory panel. And the advisory, just to show you how much a bottoms-up organization the council is, our guest that coming up in just in a minute or so is the current chair of the Hawaii Advisory Panel. And he's not an employee of Westpac, nor am I. They sponsor the program, of course, but just to show you how autonomous they and how we are self-driven, there's no supervision. This is not scripted. This is just me and Gary Beals, and we're going to chat. He's a fisherman, just like you and me. He's over there in Hilo, so he doesn't know this, but he's going to give us a volcano report to begin with. And with that, we introduce him back again visiting us. Gary over there in Hilo, how you doing, my friend?
Just fine, Mike, and thank you for the call.
Always a pleasure talking with you. Let's make sure, you know, between my radio station here in Honolulu and you, there's this thing called the mountain. So you don't really hear us unless it's online in your neck of the woods. But how are things, you know? I mean, I know a lot of people probably calling you from the mainland saying, hey, Gary, is the volcano erupting in your yard? What's going on over there?
I've had that phone call.
I bet you have.
Right. Actually, the volcano is quite a ways from my home.
Mm-hmm.
I live near the Saddle Road on the Big Island, just above Hilo. And the impact of the eruption is felt more by the people in Lower Puna,
mm-hmm,
and along the National Park area. So to think that the volcano has shut everything down on the entire island is a real misnomer.
Yeah, it's awful, especially on the mainland. Poor people are so misinformed. We're doing our best, though.
Oh, right. Yeah. I was over in Kona for most of the week there, and you get the fog on that side when we have trade winds blowing. And,
mm-hmm,
but other than that, you would say it's a regular day in Los Angeles when
yeah,
you look
yeah,
up.
Yeah, really. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That as far as the impact goes for 95% of the people on the island, it's life as usual, really.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And I hope that you that are listening on the mainland and stuff pass that word out. We're open for business. Everything is fine. But I do want to draw a line of parallel. And that's why I asked Gary the question that I did. Because all you've got to do is talk to a fisherman about weather and water temperature and all of these things change. For instance, when I was a kid, Gary, I didn't get a chance to tell you this off the air, but when I was a kid, you know, coming up from Waimea and Kamuela, we used to go to Kapoho all the time and play in those tide pools. I can't believe that they're just completely gone. That's really something that we all have to get used to, isn't it?
It is. That a few years ago, I helped some students from Kamehameha School, and they did a transect in those Waiopai tide pools.
Wow, yeah.
And this was supposedly an ongoing thing that they were going to be doing. And they did do that for several years, and now there are no more tide pools, at least in that immediate area. It's really changed a portion of the island, and the island is growing as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, you know, you're involved in a lot of the fishery. I know you know a bunch about longlining, which we'll talk about in a bit. But as a Hilo fisherman, I mean, certainly everybody ought to know that entire area out there, from the tide pools and now all of this new land, there won't be even a reef out there for generations. I mean, it takes a long time for that lava to become ocean, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. That the area that has been inundated with the new lava was one of the prime Ulua fishing areas for the shoreline fishermen. And not that it won't return to that someday, but certainly in the foreseeable future, it's just off limits. You can't even go out there. Also, the Poiki boat ramp is no more than 500 feet away from the lava flow right at the moment, and it's quite.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good for that at all, does it?
No, that would, that's the only ramp in that area, and for the fishermen that use that, they have to either launch in Hilo, which increases their travel mileage by about 30 miles.
Wow.
Launch in Bahala. So, it's changed things quite a bit, not just in the landscape, but in the way certainly the fishermen would enjoy their pastime.
You know, on another slightly different subject, I was watching some video earlier today on Florida and about the red tides. And, you know, it showed miles of beaches with fish flopping up on the sand and dying and stuff. And until I turned up the volume, I don't know. Don't tell me that's the Big Island. But isn't it true that some of the fishermen have reported that they've seen scaldings and they've seen some marine life burnt as a result of being too close to that hot water and all that chemicals?
That's true. That in the area of Kapoho, where the tide pools that you had mentioned, there have been some marine life, the turtles in particular, that have shown up where apparently they got trapped and they couldn't get out. And as the water heated up, the animals died, and then maybe the tide came up and carried them out, and they floated down the coastline. But we don't have that red tide over here, but we do have some warm water. That I was in that area about a half mile off the shoreline from the lava flow about 3 weeks ago, and the water temperature was 90 degrees.
Holy smokes.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
That far away. Hey, but you know, isn't it sort of interesting, and I'm sure this is a topic of conversation over there on the Big Island where you are, and that, you know, we are so darn inquisitive as a people. In Hawaiian, it's Niele. And it's no wonder that these people are willing to pay a lot of money and go out on the boat and tempt fate by, you know, getting in there and seeing Mama Nature at work. But it's a big reminder, isn't it, to all of us? You look how far away you were from the actual lava, and look how hot the water was. That's really hot.
Oh, certainly. Actually, because of the warm water, 90 degrees Fahrenheit, we moved the boat out further because we didn't want the engines to heat up.
Yeah, of course.
And we went offshore 2 miles, and the water temperature was still 90 degrees 2 miles offshore, that lava flow.
Okay, now let's zero in on that for a minute, because a lot of our listeners know the reason why Kona And the Kona Coast is the bill fishing capital of the world is because it goes from very shallow to very deep immediately. Isn't that exactly what's happening now out there at Kapoho, where there's this, all of this new lava that is, goes down a couple of hundred feet, and there's no bottom. I mean, the minute you jump in off there, when you can jump in off it, there won't be a bottom. It'll be thousands of feet deep.
That's correct.
Wow.
About at 3 miles offshore, your depth in the, at least on the end of the island from Cape Kumukahi to South Point, 3 miles offshore, you're on an average looking at a depth of almost a mile.
Oh, jeez.
You know, 5,000 feet deep.
Yeah, not too many Mempati down at the bottom of that. Okay.
Oh, no, and you're not going to be diving for lobster.
No, I should say not. But so, you know, I mean, this is why, and it's also very opportune that we're talking today, because everybody's taking a look at this Hurricane Hector, and you know, nobody but fishermen know more about what that's like and what you have to do to prepare about that. We certainly hope that people that have their boats in the water and all of that kind of stuff know what to do. Where do you mostly fish from? Hilo?
I fished out of Hilo for about 30 years, and recently we moved our boat over to the Kona side. And we fish primarily on the Kona side now, but quite a ways offshore. You know, we're talking anywhere from 40 to 130 miles offshore.
Yeah, so actually, and the type of boat that you have now, is that a small what you want to call maybe a longliner?
Well, we have a 54-foot boat right now, and it is an offshore boat. It's not something you would go Minpachi fishing in, whipping along the shoreline. We also are involved in a longline vessel, a 98-foot steel-hulled longliner.
That's the one I remember talking about, yeah.
Right, yeah, it's a permitted longliner. And right at the moment, it's down just south of the equator, about 300 miles, doing a tagging trip with a group that they'll be down there for about 2 months, putting tags on primarily yellowfin ahi. And they monitor the movement of the fish. This is the third trip that we've done down there like this. And the information is utilized by all of the management organizations in managing the tuna quota and tuna movements.
Yeah, that's terrific stuff, and that's the kind of gang of stuff that science that we love to get into. But one of the main reasons why I was excited to talk to Gary, because like you said, I can tell you, he's the current chair of the Hawaii Advisory Panel. And as you've learned in the last couple of weeks, when Josh Jamello and I were talking last week about this, what this panel does, it's very important that, Gary, that everybody understands that all of you on the panel are giving of your time and willing to come up with your expertise, and all you ask for people in return when they talk to the panel is tell it like it is. You know, I mean, the more info you guys get, the more valuable you can be as a panel, right, to those that are making decisions about size limits and catch limits and quotas and all of that stuff.
Exactly, and that's the advisory panel for Westpac. As you have mentioned, it's made up of volunteers. The volunteers do get reimbursed for expenses that they might incur flying to a meeting or taking a taxi, that type
sure.
of thing. But
that's only fair.
It's basically a volunteer program, and it's a bottoms up where, by that I mean that the fishermen give their input, and the Westpac takes the input through their science organizations. They end up with a science-based management plan. And I think it's important that we stress that the decisions that they come up with and the recommendations are science-based. It's not just emotion that's driving it. So that when they make a recommendation that there's a size limit on, let's say, the yellowfin tuna, that's based on scientific evidence and not just like, looking at the fish and saying, gee, we should let those little ones go or too big.
Let me throw something in there, because I remember years back when I was sort of one of the advisors to one of the advisors on the panel, that when it was all of a sudden, quote, discovered that we had our local yellowfin ahi tuna in Hawaii that weren't connected to migrating schools, they weren't connected to anything except our islands, and they seemed to be sustainable. And that's a pretty big thing to say, because everybody wants to go out and catch those rascals.
That's correct. And one of the actual statistical committee members is the person that, or one of the people that did those tagging experiments. And they did identify a local stock of yellowfin tuna that reproduces within 100 miles or so offshore here. And based on that, it sort of changed the dynamics of how we look at the stocks of that particular species. But again, this is science-based. It's not somebody just talking from, you know, because it's warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, it's not emotional. Here's the other thing. Maybe you can liken it to this. I do know that recently there's been a lot of very, very similar, as evenly distributed as they can, boats and experts catching bottom fish to determine that the status of that group, the deep seven, and you know how these guys go out and fish for science instead of fish for their wallets. They get paid, but they don't get paid a lot, but they contribute some pretty valuable information to y'all.
Oh, you hit the nail on the head with that, Mike, that actually some of the bottom fishermen are AP members. And you're right that the information that they have come up with in the last 3 or 4 years and the techniques that they're using are all science based. It is the results that they have gotten were quite different than the results that we had gotten prior to that. And based on these new results, there's a great deal of evidence that in managing the bottom fish or the deep seven, that maybe some of these bottom fish restricted areas should be opened up, or all of them should be opened up.
Well, I tell you what, I certainly have my fingers crossed there. I cannot tell you how many times on this program that we've talked to the experts, guys like like Roy Morioka and all of these other guys that Ebisui and Watamura, and all of these people that really got a good grip on the idea, and they're not rapists of the sea. They go out, they make a living, or they try. They go out and catch some fish, but they know exactly when to stop based on what they bring up. And from what I understand, Gary, and I think this is important for our listeners to get, did these guys really put their heart and soul in this? They weren't pulling any punches. They wanted the truth just as much as they wanted to keep fishing.
Oh, most definitely. That the names that you just mentioned are the highliner.
the A-team, yeah.
And the last thing that they would want to do is to wipe out the bottom fish. It's in their vested interest to have a sustainable fishery there. And they're giving you the straight scoop when they come back and they say, this is the size, this is what's available, this looks healthy or it doesn't look healthy. And based on that, we come up with a bottom fish management plan. One of the problems with that is that most of the bottom fishing areas are in state waters rather than federal
waters. Exactly, yeah.
And Westpac can only make recommendations. Westpac doesn't make laws. They can make recommendations. And the recommendations, if they affect the state waters, then it's the state gets the final say. So even though we may be bottoms up as to far as how we work, that doesn't mean that the state is bottoms up.
Yeah, and there's another point to be made. I must admit that since I've been involved, and I've been, not only has Westpac been sponsoring part of this program for a number of years, but I've been connected to the Fisherman's Forum for a long time, and I've seen a shift in what people are willing to admit to or confess to or tell the truth out, and I think that's very important. But you're right. The fish don't know where they are. Sometimes you talk about a pretty fine line between that 3 miles in or 3 miles out. Fish go back and forth between it, but I'm not sure that the same attention is being given to what's on the inside of the line as to what we are doing in the council on the outside of the line.
That's true, and I think a perfect example of this was the expansion of the Northwestern Islands, the monument, that it was some of the people that were trying to sell that idea would point out that, oh, we're going to save the big eye tuna. These are migratory fish. Mm-hmm. They don't know where the line is at. So that was a false claim. And there were quite a few other false claims that were made, at least in my eyes. And I say this as an individual fisherman, not as a representative of Westpac.
And Gary, I say the same thing as an individual on this program a lot. I agree with you. And I think that, there were a lot of decisions made about specifically what Gary Beal is talking about is the Papahanaumokuakea, the expansion of this huge expansion, which literally, and let me ask you this, because I'm not sure, were there any of these Kauai guys on the panel so that you got real information on who were some of the people that would really be suffering by the extension of the monument?
Well, the people that would suffer the most were the longline fishermen that went up there to get the big eye.
Exactly.
And the big eye are in that particular area. They're a little bit cooler water. The yellowfin, and people say, gee, we're getting just as many fish now as we used to get. Yes, but you're getting a different species. Mm-hmm. You're getting yellowfin, and those are caught down south of the islands here, and they don't have as long of a shelf life.
They don't travel. In other words, maybe, Gary, as a fisherman, you can explain that. What is shelf life and travel and condition? Everybody knows that swordfish has the longest shelf life. That's why it's so interesting to catch that. But isn't there a pretty big difference, even though they look very similar? Isn't there a big difference between Big Eye and Yellowfin because of where the fish live?
Oh, huge difference. As far as we're talking about the quality of the final product. And we have basically eliminated that fish from the local stock by not allowing us to go into that expanded monument area. Now, certainly we could fish outside that area and still catch the Big Eye, but it means that the fisherman has to take his boat much further into rougher water, stay out longer, and all this translates into a higher cost to the fisherman.
Amen. And, you know, there's the other side of things that we talk about, and I talked about it earlier on the show before we reached out to you, and that was we're not really supplying very much of the fish that we eat. As a matter of fact, the number could be a lot bigger, and it could be bigger just because maybe the Trump administration might have a different look at it than the Obama administration, or maybe any administration for that matter, can take a better look at what's going on out there and use this new science to make some concessions as to what we can eat and what we need to import.
That's very true, Mike. And a recent example of that would be what's called the Billfish Bill. And it's a bill in Congress that has gone through. It hasn't been signed yet by the president. But what it has done is that it will eliminate the Hawaii fishermen or any fishermen from the Central Pacific, Guam, American Samoa, or CNMI. You can no longer sell your billfish to the mainland. And what happens is that when the longliners go out, they catch billfish. That's a part of what they don't, that's not the target species, but they get those and they bring them into the auction. The auction buys them and they export a lot to the mainland. But we can no longer do that because there was a bill that was recently passed that will prohibit that from being done. So, and the fish aren't endangered. It's just a movement actually by someone in Florida, and not one of our people in Congress from Hawaii stood up to protest that bill.
Yeah, the only good news is we're in an election cycle, and actually it's deja vu, Gary, because earlier in the program I was talking about those bills just as a news item. I didn't get into the depth that you and I are right now, but I pointed out that no matter who gets elected, these people have better take a look at this thing, because isn't it the concession that's going to be made, hopefully, for Hawaii? In that isn't the situation really that Florida and the East Coast, they really did fish the fish out? You know, I mean, it was, you know, the demand was huge to catch the fish. I mean, look what happened to the size of swordfish. But we're not like that. These marlin, and you can explain that as a fisherman, as a longliner as well, it's not the intended catch, but it is bycatch, and it has value. You certainly don't want to just throw them away, because a lot of them die when they get hooked.
Oh, exactly. And to give you an idea that based on the statistics that are on the record now, that on the average, the value of those billfish, and we're talking about all the billfish other than the swordfish now, mm-hmm. that the value of those billfish would be about $2 million to the state of Hawaii. That's $2 million that will not be coming back here because of this bill that is being passed or was passed in Congress. And I could understand some movement on that if fish were endangered, but they're not even close to being endangered. So it's just one more thing where you know, we've been affected by people that have no idea of how they're impacting folks in other areas of the you know, the world.
Yeah, and that, gang, is exactly why Gary's with us. It's exactly why there's an advisory panel. And these folks, like Gary said, and I know a lot of these guys, is they are unpaid. They're putting back into the fishery only because they care about what you're doing as well. I you know, for instance, we could take, let's talk for a minute about the charter fleet. Let's talk about these guys, particularly in Kona, that are doing a heck of a job on releasing fish. However, everybody knows that there's certain sides of a billfish. If you catch that fish, it's better off being consumed because it's eaten more than it's worth. So, I mean, you know, isn't there sort of a happy medium in that as well? You don't want to be releasing all of those fish, just the big ones.
Oh, definitely. We recently had a fishing tournament here in Hilo put on by the Hilo Trollers Club.
Oh, yeah.
And what they did, they took the fish that they caught, not all of them, but most of them, and donated the fish to the community college culinary program.
Wow.
They took the fish, cooked it up, and served it to the people in Pohoa that have lost their homes.
Wow.
So the fishermen working with the community, and you know, it's a different picture than you normally get in the media where the fishermen are usually painted as the bad guys.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, I got another one. I got another one. We were talking a while ago about some of y'all that give and give and give. And my lifelong friend is Roy Morioka. I mean, we grew up together. We've known each other for over 50 years. Roy put together a deal, a Fish for the Hungry tournament, and that was out of out of love for fishing. And all the fish got donated to Institute for Human Services, and were cooked up by leading chefs and fed to the homeless. And you would think that people eat fresh fish. Some of these guys and gals hadn't had fresh fish for 5 years, so they come down there and they eat the fish, and everybody felt happy at least for a day.
Oh, most definitely.
That's pretty cool.
Roy Morioka and Ed Watamora and yeah. Some of those folks do a fantastic job on that. And the one individual here that headed this up was Gil Kuali'i, who's also an AP member here
on the
panel. And Sean Sumiki, who's one of the head people of the culinary program at the community college. This was all volunteer. Nobody got paid for doing it. And, again, it was the fisherman helping out somebody that needed some help. And I take my hat off to those folks. It was really a great thing. And for the people that are listening here and would really like to get involved in doing this stuff, sign up for the advisory panel.
Yeah, and gang, you know, I know that Gary's reaching out here, and I told you earlier and last week when he talked to Josh, this is a very rewarding experience. You go to wpcouncil.org, okay? Let your fingers do the walk and go to wpcouncil.org, because right now we got some folks that are matriculating out that have served a long time, and you plain need some fresh new blood. What would you say to somebody as one of the criteria? I mean, you know, you're an expert. Maybe somebody doesn't feel quite the expert as you do, but they have expertise in one or more areas. We want them, don't we?
Well, maybe calling me an expert is a little stretch, Mike.
Nah, you know, you're only. Listen, I know about you guys, Gary. You're one of the movers and shakers over there on the Big Island.
Yeah. But I agree that the new ideas, new people coming in, see things in a fresh light. And whoever might be interested out there, your application is due by September 1, and it's a 4-year term that you would serve. And I may not be an expert, but I can almost guarantee that you would find this a rewarding experience. You would learn, and you'll meet some of the best folks in the world.
Let me tell you something. Let me blow your and everybody else's horn for a minute. I can tell you that all of the guys I've known, and I've talked to many, many, many on this panel since it started, and that is you can feel part of, even if it's just one little decision that makes somebody see the light and make a change that's good for the fishery and good for the fishermen and good for everybody, is, you know, mission accomplished, right? I mean, if you leave the planet and they say, there's a guy that made it possible to eat fish, you know, I'm all happy about that.
Yeah, it's like the bumper sticker. Eat fish, thank a fisherman.
There you go. And what about the other one? Give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, feed him forever. We love those. Huh?
That's right.
Okay, well, listen, I think that's a good idea. Just make sure, and maybe somebody just tuning in, Gary Beals is the chair right now of the Hawaii Advisory Panel to the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And we are reaching out, not just to tell you what they do, but to do some serious recruiting. And once again, when you got in it, What were your expectations, and what have you got out of it? You've been working hard in this thing for a while. What's a big victory for you?
Well, I've been involved with the advisory panel for almost 20 years in different aspects. And one of the things that jumps out to me is that you get, just by osmosis, by being around the people, mm-hmm. you can see how the decisions are made. And Paul Dalzell, who was, he's retired now, but he was the chief scientist for the Westpac. And I remember a statement that Paul made some time ago that once we have an idea within the council, it will take about 7 years before that is ever implemented. And I went, my goodness, man, how can we get anything done? It takes so long. But having been involved, I can see why it's important that you don't make, you know, changes next week, that you look at all aspects of it. And it, in taking the 7 years, which is an average, I think it's a wise process to follow. And for me personally, I think I've become much more tolerant to certain changes and how they're done. I certainly have been frustrated with different things, but that's just me. And the real plus is you will meet the nicest people you'll ever encounter.
Well, I can tell you, I can tell you one thing. You've done it for 20 years, so you've done a lot of turning the other cheek, I could imagine, in that period of time. But it is true. Listen, you know, I mean, this is the time of the year right now. You talk about politics, and everybody's leaning each way. It doesn't matter what party you are, as long as you can have a big old battle during the voting season, and then after you can go have a drink and a cocktail together and talk it over. Isn't that the most important part? Coming to these meetings, coming to these Fishers forums, listening to the panel, and then letting your representative, your congressman, or your whatever know, hey, look, this is important to me, and here's the reason why.
That's true. I mentioned earlier about the Westpac and the fact that the Westpac makes recommendations, not laws. Westpac members also cannot lobby, but as an individual or an advisory panel member, as long as you are representing yourself, you can certainly contact the councilman, congressman, representatives, whatever it might be, and tell them what direction you would like to see them go in.
I'll tell you, I would like to tell where to go, but where I'm telling them where to go might not be politically correct, but it's true. And it takes very, very little. And all of these people, Gary, I know that you know this, every single one of the politicians you talk to, even if you don't agree with them, they are hungry birds in a nest. They want input from their constituents. They want to know what people think.
They do. And if you don't educate yourself through the advisory group and then approach these people, then when things change in a direction you don't like, you have nobody else to blame but yourself. So you've got to get with the program, get involved, and make your voice heard.
Hey, my brother, thank you very much for doing that, Gary. And I hope that if we can get one or two people to jump up and be a part of this council, this panel, as a result of what we've been doing here for the last couple of weeks, you wouldn't find a happier guy around. Thanks, Gary, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay, Mike. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, when we come back, we're not going to come back. We're done. Our thanks to everybody, particularly Gary Beals, the chair of the Hawaii Advisory Panel. And if you want to know more about what we just talked about, you go to wpcouncil.org, wpcouncil.org, and click on previous shows if you want. And also drop me a mail. If you want to hear something on the program, shoot me an email, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Tight lines, big bites, following season, safety for you. Go catch fish and enjoy it while you do it.